Carl Alexander talks fast, and a lot of stuff he talks about touches on subjects that a lot of developers hope to never have to think about. I've seen him talks in the WordPress space and known him as the serverless guy, having founded Emir, a serverless DevOps platform that takes the headache out of managing your own AWS infrastructure. But Carl says this is actually his second act. In this episode, we get to meet the guy behind the full-size stand-up poster and book on object-oriented programming to talk about his early start in programming and robotics and how he accidentally fell into WordPress development and the challenges of building a business from the ground up while being bad at marketing. If you've never met Carl in person, buckle up. I think you're going to enjoy this one. Welcome to Community Code. Community End Code, the podcast where we talk to the human beings behind the commits. I'm here today with Carl Alexander, a longtime WordPress developer. But really, if you know Carl, if you've seen Carl talk, if you have done anything like that, you've probably associated him with the concept of serverless for WordPress. And we'll talk a little bit about that, I think. But Carl... Yeah. Welcome, and tell us about yourself.
Oh my goodness. I mean, yeah, I think now I'm like the serverless guy, but I was like, in the 2010s, I was like the object-oriented guy, basically. I wrote like this, I was writing all these articles on how to do proper object-oriented programming with WordPress. I even wrote a book on it. Yeah. So it's like my second act, if you will, inside the WordPress community. But yeah, no, I mean, my trajectory has been long. I think I started programming, I was like 7 or 8 years old or something. And then around that time, I also did my first robotics project. So I've been like involved in tech, you know, from a young age too. Like same thing with the serverless. When I gave a talk on, I say like, I've been a sysadmin for almost 30 years. You know, like I've been playing with servers since I'm mm-hmm. in my teens, you know, so it's just like, I've been around, but yeah, in the WordPress space, that's like my second act right now is the stuff. But I there's a lot of stuff. I just get hyper focused on a couple of topics. Like that's one of them. The other one, we were talking just a bit pre-show. I've been trying to do pitches for work camps on mental health stuff, like not necessarily like depression, but just like how to, you know, like I don't have an official diagnosis, but like I'm definitely autistic. I have ADHD. We were talking about that. I basically always have a drink because I've learned early in my life that nobody would get upset at you if you were holding a drink or always drinking something instead of like playing with your hands, even though I have like a Captain America fidget toy and that stuff. So I've been applying work camps with that as well, but haven't done a talk on that yet. But I talk a lot about it as well. Just like less, I'm less vocal about it and it's less techie. Yeah. You know, like serverless kind of like sexy, you know, like they're like, ooh, like serverless. are there servers with serverless? As like, and all that stuff. So I get more talks about that, but I'm really passionate about the second thing too.
Yeah. Let's start at the beginning. Okay. You talked about, you mentioned that you got into programming and robotics really early. Like, yeah. Was computers and technology always just sort of around you? And how did that sort of cultivate?
Oh, yeah. My dad got a computer pretty early on that was by Philips, if you believe. Which, for the longest time, I don't know how much people know about Philips, but basically, like, in my mind, Philips was always like razors and like, mm-hmm. you know, but they're a huge conglomerate. And they, you know, ASML, which everybody knows now for the chips, spawns from Philips. NVIDIA spawns from Philips. Again, I didn't know how much they did tech, but I still was like, a Philips computer, why isn't it like a Hewlett Packard, like, or a, like a, you know, Compaq, if you mm-hmm, remember Compaq mm-hmm, computer mm-hmm. or stuff like that. So we had a computer lab at my elementary school. Sorry, sometimes I think of the French words, but basically, but yeah, in elementary school, so I did like the robotics project there, and that was with, they were Apple actually, they were Apple, and then it became IBM, but it was with Apple. It was like Logo. Did you ever play Logo? Like use Logo?
I think so.
It was like the little turtle. So it's like
yeah.
Given instructions and stuff. So like I basically built animations with the thing, and then the animations would control like I had like a hydroplane 1 year, so we had like a tub with water, and it had propellers. And 1 year was like a Ferris wheel and all that stuff. So I would have the animation control the real thing.
Oh.
So I did like a radio interview at some point about it. So I did that. Then I went to high school, and then high school I kind of fell off for a bit. I did some basic and some 3D stuff, but a bit of web. I miss my calling. Like I read all these people that got into web early, and I was just like not really into it and all that. And then college was like computer engineering, so it was more hardware. I did computer science. I did the more computer science option. But I didn't do that much programming. I kind of fell off for a little bit. And then I came back to it. Like my first job was in the law firm. I did sysadmin stuff for a law firm. And then I started building tools for them. And that's actually a really important point is I love building tools, which is a bit like how the serverless and a lot of my projects have gone. But I like building tools, and I just realized that I like programming, so I went back into it, and that's been the journey. Well, not quite. I did agency, then I was going to do MBA, then I realized I like programming more than being a business person, so sure. I went back. So, but I always joke because I applied to Harvard and Stanford and all those places because I had pretty high grades, but I didn't get in, and I'm glad that I didn't, basically. Yeah. It would have been a very different life for me. And I like programming too much to get. So anyways, it always drags me back. That's like the kind of, my journey. It's always like, I try to get off, like I kind of get dragged out of programming in some way. And my heart is really in it. And it's like, I just kind of follow my heart a lot in my life. And it just brings me back here. That's why I love the WordPress community. I started teaching programming, even though like a lot of the stuff I was teaching was very high end from the get go. Like I was just, you know, I used to have these slides that were like, you lost me at hi, I'm Carl, you know, which was like the first slide. And I was just, it was just there to be like, ask questions. Don't be intimidated.
Yeah.
I'm like, a lot of people are here are self-taught and don't have like a formal computer science background. And I'm just here to like, explain things to you, like how to do them differently in a way that makes sense, because a lot of the problem with object-oriented programming in WordPress was just that people would try to implement things like classes, and then they didn't really understand why classes exist or had to use them or like what they were supposed to do, and they would make stuff, and then they were like, well, this doesn't feel good, and also it, like I don't feel like it helps, and it didn't, because they weren't and it wasn't their fault, right? Like it was just like WordPress is largely procedural, so and trying to repackage this in a more object-oriented way requires a lot of high-level architectural thinking that is hard. Like it's like when you use a framework like Symfony or Laravel, a lot of that thinking is done for you. You have right. like all the primitives that you can use, and you don't have that with WordPress. So I was teaching you how to build these primitives that I still use today. Like Emir, my serverless platform, like has a plugin, and it's all object-oriented programming, but it's using all stuff that's like from years ago. Like WP Rocket uses, like I have code attributed to me in WP Rocket because it's just like, it's a primitive like that is good and doesn't really need anything else. Like it's just, it's been good for like almost a decade, and it's still good because it solves the problem in an elegant and clean way. And you just keep using it.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of, sorry. I'm like the master of going on tangents.
This is great. This is what we're about. I'm happy to go on tangents. I will circle back.
Okay.
I wanted to ask about, you said you're, when you went to do computer engineering, you were thinking more hardware and not software. What was the, Where did you see that going? Like, did you see that going? Is that just an interesting thing at the time, or did you actually like have like, when I graduate, maybe I'll do this thing?
I mean, there was so, I mean, nobody ever, it was such a different time. Like, so for context, I graduated computer engineering in 2006. So 20 years ago, actually, it's going to be my 20 year reunion this year. And back in 2006, you know, like so much of what you can do today wasn't possible, right? Like, if you wanted to work on computer chips, for example, like your options were largely just go work at Intel or like a couple of like a AMD or like, you know, but small, like there's like, you couldn't imagine today that you could just design a chip, send it to China and get that done, right? Like, it's just like, same thing with the 3D printing and all that stuff. Like 3D printers were an entire department budget in 2006. So I loved it, but it was just like, there's no, you know, I only know, I'm sure there's more than one, but like out of like the circle of people I know, first of all, I'm from Montreal. I didn't study Montreal, which is very unusual, but all my friends in Montreal, basically that did engineering, they all work in the gaming industry because that's basically where you went, because Montreal is kind of like the gaming industry mecca. Like almost every large studio has studios here. So you basically just, everybody went into that. But where I went in Kingston, most people also ended up as software developers, basically, because there was just not a lot of jobs for people that knew how to make computer chips or all that low level stuff. Like, I love compiler class, but there's no point in building a compiler, you know, except for fun, which you can do. But it was just, that was like where the careers were. And for me, it was even because of the catch 22, I'd already been doing summer jobs for this law firm.
Right.
And the director already knew me. And he's like, I was like backpacking and he was in Europe. And I was just, he was just like, well, do you want to come work for us? And I was like, sure. Like I don't really know what else I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So that seemed fine. Like I wasn't going to do tech support. Like I was going to be with the backend server people. So I was going to be kind of level 2 support. I would do some infra and all that stuff, which was like interesting. So I was like, okay. But it was not clear what you could do, you know, like the only, you know, I have one of my housemates was in computer science. He's freaking brilliant. He basically started at Google that year. He's still at Google, like, you know, but outside of that, like most people didn't really know where to go. Like computer, you know, software wasn't that big yet, even on its own, but it was just like, okay, well, Montreal had a lot of video game studios. So like the computer engineers went to the video game studios and I wasn't that interested in video games. I did I did computer graphics thinking I would like computer graphics. And as gifted and brilliant as I am, my only class that I almost failed was linear algebra. And basically computer graphics is all linear algebra. Mm-hmm. It's all like matrices and matrix transforms and all that stuff. And that's the course I almost failed. So so I was like, And I almost failed the computer graphics course. So I was like, there's just no way I'm going into video games. I mean, I still dream of making a video game, but, you know, it was just not realistic at the time. So I mean,
there's enough things now, there's enough tools that you don't have to worry about the graphics part anymore.
No, exactly. And I was just not involved in web. Like I just didn't do any web. You didn't do web at school, right?
Right,
Like my exposure was Java and I did some C#, basically like some .NET through like going to like clubs and stuff like that. But it was just very little. Like my summer job was like, I did a summer job for the Canadian government and that was still Java, like Tomcat servers with like, it didn't make web look fun at all. Right.
No.
So I really missed the boat on that. Looking back at everybody's like retrospective, if you like read about like DHH and a lot of these people, like they just got into the web really early and I just didn't get the right exposure for that. So it just never kind of appealed to me till actually I got to WordPress. WordPress is how I got into web development.
That's That's a pretty fascinating
Yeah.
intervention.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I rode the GeoCities wave. I was big on GeoCities. I had a handful of dumb little sites, and then I started because I was involved in the San Francisco sort of goth community, and that was all sort of like BBSs and IRC, actually it's pre-IRC, like message boards, and there was a sfgoth.net was sort of like the hub, and I knew the guy that ran it, and I was able to get a page on that, and that was sort of like my first real non-GeoCities site.
Yeah.
And back then it was like if you wanted to do something functional, it was like, well, here's a Perl script, or here's like a CGI bin or something
Yeah.
that you can drop into your site, and it will maybe do something useful, which
Yeah.
was not very fun at all. And I also and I never yeah that was not a thing that I could see myself writing, even though I did take like a couple programming classes in college, but like yeah, I was mostly self-taught. And that actually segues into you've taught and you've wrote a book. Tell me about how that sort of started and came to be.
Oh my goodness. Okay, well, we'll have to drill a bit back. So I started doing web development. I got hired as the first, basically, like this agency was like being hired to like make a website for. I was trying to apply for a .NET position, and then, funny enough, like everybody thinks I'm like great at programming, but I could not pass a programming interview to save my life, basically. Like I was just like. You know, like I would kill the soft skill stuff. We'd talk, everything's great. They're just like, I even applied to Ubisoft that way. It was like, they're like, cool, we just need to make you pass like a quick exam and then we'll probably be good to go. And I was like, oh no, I'll never hear from you again, basically. So I applied for this .NET position and they were like, you're kind of weak, but you know, we have. Do you know anything about WordPress or something like that? I was like, no, but I'll learn anything. Like that's what I was telling. And so that got me involved in WordPress. And then I did my first WordCamp. And then I started organizing them and doing meetups. So that's like kind of how I got into it. But I was really already really into Symfony at the time. You know, it was still Symfony 1, but Symfony 2 was coming out. Which is wild. Like Symfony 2 must be 15 years old, actually, like something crazy. But it came out. They had all this component system. I loved it, and I could just see architecturally like how this could fit. So I was just like, and then I would talk to people, and they're like, "Oh, you can't do object. You probably remember those, like you know, an advanced WordPress group. You can't do object-oriented programming with WordPress. You can't do this." And I was just like. Nah, you can. It's hard. Like it's legitimately hard because you don't have the primitives, you don't have the components like Symfony built and stuff like that. So you have to think really harder about how to do stuff. And so I just started doing that. Like I just started teaching that. And then at the same time, I quit my job after 2 years. And not getting the MBA, and I just realized I wanted to be on my own and start my own business. This is going to tie to the serverless stuff because I'm still on that journey. But basically, I started the journey to just start my own business. And I was like, okay, how am I going to do this? And then I was just like, I guess I wanted to do. So my first thing was to do, I really like another special interest of mine is like fitness science and stuff. So I wanted to do like a health app. I actually had health. It was called health, but the old English way of spelling it. It's like HELTHE, I think. And then that kind of bombed. Like I couldn't get any traction on that because I'm a noob, basically, and I suck at marketing. But I was just like, then I was like, I wanted to build Sentry was new then. Like everybody knows Sentry then, but I wanted to build Sentry for WordPress. So I rebranded it to health, and then I was like, okay, there's still blogs on that in my on my blog. So I was like, I'm gonna start blogging about WordPress tech stuff and hopefully that'll take off. But it never really did for very obvious reasons. Even Sentry in the WordPress space is now even after all this time, it's not that big. but because back then people were like, is that like New Relic? I'm like, it's not quite, you know, like it's hard to explain to people like error reporting and all that stuff. Like, but that was like the catalyst. Like the catalyst was like always like, I want to be self-sufficient on my own because all I want to do is write code and feel financially safe writing code. That's like my North Star, basically. Like for my entire career is like, I just want to write code and feel safe doing it. And so I started writing all of that. And then I just decided, why not write a book? You know, I had this book and sign up sheet because I was trying all the hacks, like the growth hacks. And I was just, I had the, and then at some point, if I got enough people signed up for the book, I'd start writing it. And I did, and I published it, and it did shockingly well. Like, I think the lifetime sales of it is like $32,000. Like, for a niche.
Right.
Book on how to do object. It's not even how to do object-oriented programming in WordPress. It's like, it's just object-oriented programming, like the concept taught with like WordPress as examples, like as opposed to the like, you know, class vehicle, car extends vehicle, and all this stuff that's like really kind of like not useful. Like I would use a lot of like WordPress stuff to do the examples. But it's, to me, it's still wild to this day that it like did that well.
Yeah. For context, like I did for a number of years, I was making online tutorials for Pluralsight. Pluralsight has a library of video courses that you can take. And a lot of the people, they refer to the people that do their courses as authors. And a lot of them actually are also like written authors. And so I've had conversations with some of the other Pluralsight authors about who have written books. And they're like, yeah, the money, like it's really just marketing. Like I don't make anything off of this book, even though my name is on a book and it's like maybe the Amazon bestseller in its category of like some niche, like specific computer technical thing, but they're not making a ton of money on it. And especially because it goes through like O'Reilly or something. So like they're taking their cut, but like it's basically just name recognition. Like they can say, I have a book, and then also you can take this class with me here. And they're saying that they're making a lot more in royalties from Pluralsight stuff than they were from their book. And that's why they kept doing it, is because that's where more money was coming in, and they had a really good sort of revenue sharing model.
Yeah. I self-published because there was all this self-publishing at the time, like Nathan Barry. I was using Kit, Nathan Barry, Adam Watan had like Refactoring to Collections. That was like an awesome book. Like I just went to self-publishing. I've made more money than a lot of people I know that have published on Amazon and stuff. Like not like a bit, like, you know, 3-4 times more, you know? It was all marketing for it. Like, it was just like content marketing, all this stuff that doesn't work as well anymore. But it was just like, it was just, you know, marketing works when you have a place. And this I owe to like Matt Cromwell, basically. Like Matt Cromwell was like, the admin of like Advanced WordPress group and he found my stuff and he started sharing it, and then he was like, no, you can promote yourself here. You used to have a wizard for like whether you should post or not, and there was an actual answer that was like, if you're Carl Alexander, it's okay, basically. Like there was like, that's how he was a real ally at that time. And I think that's one of my struggles now around marketing, is those spaces don't really exist. Like, I mean, but, you know, people say X, you know, is good for that stuff. But like, I've been going back a bit and there's so much noise. It doesn't feel very good to me. I know some people have a lot of success on it, but it's just like, it doesn't feel like it. Like, I really liked like feeling like I was part of, like, that's why I try to do a Discord. I've been talking to a lot of other companies, like try to do a Discord, like build your community on Discord.
Yeah.
So that you have a place, you know, that people can come chat. Like that's always been my hope for like Emir, is to just have an active Discord where people can come chat and talk not just about serverless stuff. They can talk about programming stuff or like anything they find cool, and just build that out somehow. But that's missing nowadays. Like, yeah. Because to me, there was like, Amy Hoy is her name. She used to have like, I forget what the course was, but basically like, she would talk about like Sales Safari. You have to find where your people hang out. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know where my people hang out anymore. Like, because most of us don't really want to hang out on the social networks anymore.
Right.
And we're kind of like post status Slack and a couple of things, but it's just like, it doesn't have like the same stuff that back in the day, you know, I could go on Reddit or, I mean, Reddit's still goodish, but I just don't go on the WordPress. I'll be honest, I don't go on much on Reddits, but I think they're still good, but it's just, there's no more advanced WordPress group. I don't want to be on Facebook anyways. So it's it's difficult, you know,
yeah.
But at the time it was great. Like it allowed me to achieve something significant, but it was like what to transition. Once that ended, that's kind of like the year the book came out is kind of like when I transitioned to the serverless stuff. The timing was just coincidental, but it was just like, I was ready for the next thing. And that ended up being the next thing, you know?
Yeah.
And then COVID happened, which also like threw a lot of wrenches and everything. So it was just, mm-hmm. might have been a different trajectory if it was not for COVID. But, you know, that's also a part of the issue too. It's hard to do marketing when a lot of it was me going to conferences, talking to people. And that's still a lot of like my best networking, my best growth comes from that. Like,
yeah.
And sharing. Like, I still publish a lot. I mean, for the readers, like for the listeners, like Emir, my business, like I've been writing a report every 2 weeks to four, between 2 and 4 weeks for 5 years. Like I've written 94 or 95 of them, basically. Like it's going to be the 5-year anniversary in February, basically. So I've been sharing in public my struggles, my this, my that, like very honestly. Like I had an interview, it's not out yet, with Nathan from like mm-hmm. WP Build. And he's like, you know, like you and Katie Key are like very down to earth, but you're like so much rougher. Like I was just like, cause it's hard. People should know it's hard. Like I don't want people to be like, oh, like you were kind of a overnight success or stuff. I'm like, there's no overnight. Like I've been working on this since 2019 and I, right. you know, and it's still not, you know, it's still hard, you know? And I think people should know that. And be clear-eyed about it. I think that's always been really important to me. Like same thing when I did a Pressonomics conference too mm-hmm. On stuff that was like that. And it was just like talking about success and what success means to people. And I think you have to be like honest, you know?
Yeah.
And because otherwise like people just see what you decide to show them. And I can't show 100%, and that's not the point. But the point is, like, if you don't show the real difficult stuff, you know, people just think it's easy, you know? And it's really not, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's really not easy.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much surface. The social media tends to highlight the good stuff and creates this sort of, like, almost fake version of everyone, which is, I think, it's a reason why I don't spend as much time as I used to on social media.
Yeah, I mean, it's been good. Like, there's a, you know, it's hard. Like, I've talked about it, like, not, like, written or anything, but I've talked a bit about it, like, informally. It's just, like, it sucks that, like, the right thing to do for marketing hurts you so much.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to deal with that, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm still avoiding it, but it's one of the challenges that I find with the whole thing is that I know, like, you don't need to convince me that if I was really active on LinkedIn or
right.
really on X or Blue Sky or choose your, you know,
yeah.
or every, that it would probably be good for the business, but what is the cost that I'm willing to bear on this? And it's hard, you know, like it's, you know, I talk a lot about what are you willing, like, you know, I really want, like, if it's not clear, I've been doing this for 15 years on my own, trying to build a business that is for me. And I still haven't quite, I feel like I'm the closest I've ever been, but I still have not succeeded. But, you know, I'm willing to take the loss, you know, like, what is the cost that you're willing to bear to get that success? And that was kind of like the Pressonomics thing, was just like, what is the cost you're willing to bear? Are you willing to take all this, you know, crap that you have to see and deal with on social media to be successful? Obviously, you know, some people manage better than others, but I just find that it triggers my ADHD. Like I scroll, it's distracting, you know, you just see a lot of stuff you'd rather not see. It's very hard, right? Like it's, you know, and it's not because I don't like the people there, or there's not good people that I wouldn't love to interact with, but the blast radius of the whole thing is huge.
Yeah.
So it's difficult for me. So I write a lot and I publish a lot. That's why I like newsletters and stuff, because it's, you get to choose, you get to opt in to seeing it. And, you know, like the reports aren't that popular. Like I started with 250 people. I think I'm around 200. People are falling off. But again, part of it is just, I'm writing it for me.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason too. Like you should do a lot. If you do a lot of stuff for you, maybe you'll be successful. Maybe you won't, but at least, you know, I think you'll never look at yourself in the mirror and be like, oh, like I wasn't true to myself, which is like really critical for me. So it's just like, but that's a very hard tension right now, is how to do that. Because I find the cost is high.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about Amir. We've been dancing around it long enough. For anyone who doesn't know and hasn't gone to one of your talks, like, explain what serverless is for somebody who doesn't know anything about serverless.
Yeah.
Like, what does it mean?
What is a serverless architecture? Yeah, exactly. I mean, I could get into the technical weeds. This is like what's changed a lot this year, is I've just kind of refined a lot. I'm thinking a lot. I'm branching out into all of PHP. That's my plan. And I've just been trying to get to the root. I used to be, again, autistic, super technical. You love the technical aspect. Like, but really, what is the point of serverless? Like, first, yes, there are servers with serverless. That is not the point. The point of server, I'll just tackle this right away because I think it's important, but the point with serverless is that we all know about servers, we know they exist and stuff like that, but it's about your sphere of concern, right? Like, how much do you want to care about servers,
right?
You know, do you want to be able to SSH into it and do all this stuff? Do you want to like have to just do all this manual work? Do you want to know how much RAM you need, how many CPUs you need? Do you want to know about all these things? Do you want to care about all these things? And the answer is, like, increasingly, this is what's changed this year. The answer is no, basically. The answer is increasingly no. And it's increasingly no across the entire spectrum of people, not just like the non-technical people who obviously like have... They never wanted to care about it in the first place. They don't know what it means when they get to the, like, you know, pricing page and they look, okay, I have these CPUs here and this and PHP workers. Like, what does this all mean? Or like in the case of Pantheon, like, how many app servers do I get? And like all this stuff, like, they don't want it. But now, like in my new talk, that like the reworked talk that I do, like I talk about the Vercel experience, and I gave that talk at CloudFest, and there was like these young developers in the back and they were nodding so hard that their head would fall off, basically, because it's the same thing with developers. Like, developers nowadays don't want to know about this stuff. They just want to deploy code. Like, you know, like what I use in my talk is, like, you know, deploy, scale, and sleep. That's it. Like, when you deploy in Vercel, the only time you have to worry with anything is if AWS is going down, basically, right? And even Vercel's doing a better job at handling that, but it's still like, you know, you have your life, you have your obviously issues, but nobody's going to be super upset at you if AWS goes down and you go down at the same time, because the entire internet's on fire anyway.
Right.
Probably you might not even be able to message in Slack, like the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, so if that's your only time that you might have a downtime, that is very appealing. This is a much better appealing thing than being like, oh, I was on the front page of Reddit and then my site blew up. I don't know what's happening. Like, it was my lightning in a bottle moment and the whole thing.
Yeah.
So serverless addresses that problem, basically. And that's me giving you the high level. If you want, we could talk about the more technical reasons, but at the high level, that's the idea of serverless. And that's like what's changed a lot this year in ways that have shocked me, is just that how fast the transitions happen. But it's just like, you know, just people just don't want to have to deal with that stuff anymore. I started working on it because I didn't want to deal with it. And I used to joke in my early iterations of the talk, I should be like the last person to promote this stuff because I know servers. I've been a sysadmin for like, at the time, 20 years or something, you know, like I know this stuff inside out, but I don't want to be on pager duty, you know, I have a talk coming up in Montreal and I rebranded the title, but it's like it's basically that. It's like how to not be on pager duty. Like, I don't want to be on pager duty. Since I've switched to this stuff, like, I've never had to worry about anything, you know? And to me, that is very, 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 you know, it's priceless in a way that you can't cost it. Yeah. You know, like, I talk about that too. Like, you have to be intellectually honest about this stuff. Like, yes, you could go and fix the thing and if you're comfortable with servers, but even if you're not, like, it's just like, okay, you're paying $5 for a DigitalOcean droplet, but you know, how much is it worth it to like deal with like, oh, the SSL certificate broke at some point, or like I have to migrate, like, you know, your Linux version's out of date or this or that, you know?
And I had to go down a rabbit hole on my DigitalOcean droplet, which my site's still on, because I installed a plugin that required PHP 8 point something, right? And my server was still on 7.4 because I never touch it. And so then I had to like do all those things, like there's all those things that I don't want to think about, like go into the server, SSH into the server, do an upgrade on the operating system. Then that broke a whole bunch of other shit on my website. And like, there's a whole like rabbit hole involved in things that, and at the end of it, I was like, you know, had I already had in like migrated this site to Pantheon or something else, I wouldn't have to worry about any of this. I could just like click a button and then it would have the new version and it would be done.
Yeah, so hosting solves some of these problems, but it doesn't solve the scaling one, which is like, the scaling one is still a very big problem for, and again, I'm talking to a lot of executives, like not just developers and stuff like that. Like, that one is a huge problem still, you know, like, you know, there was like, early on with Emir, like they don't exist anymore, but I was just like, there was a customer that was on Pantheon, and Matt Cheney was like, get them off of me. Like, I was just like, cause they were just this crazy WooCommerce site. And it was just like, they were already on the biggest custom thing that you could do. And you hear these stories all the time, right? Yeah. Like my favorite one from WordCamp Canada is like, this guy who sells, I shit you not, $100,000 a month of worms.
I think I remember this story.
Yeah. And it's like, and he's just a farmer. Like, he just wants to sell his work. He doesn't understand why, and he shouldn't, you know, but that's why kind of Shopify and Wix and Squarespace kind of win in that respect, because
they absorb all of that scaling issue.
Yeah. I mean, so when I was at Cloudfest, I talked with some executives and they call it like the SaaSification of hosting, which is like kind of a weird term to use because most people think of SaaS as like the pay per month thing. But what they mean is like when you pay for a SaaS, you never worry if the SaaS is going to go down or not, right? Like you pay and it just absorbs the the traffic, right?
Yeah.
And that's it, right? Like if you go, if you make it on the front page of Reddit, like, you know, the platform's going to handle it and the whole thing, right? So they meant it more in that scenario, right? But that's kind of like where the customer expectations are going, right? Like they just don't want, so that's why like this serverless stuff is just like a technological solution to offering that peace of mind that people want. And you bring up good points too, which is like one of the things that I'm focusing on versus a lot of the, like there's Breath and there's Laravel Vapor, although like that product is kind of dying, like Taylor's really focused on Laravel Cloud. But I support PHP 7.2 I'm going to start working on 8.5 right now, but it's like, I don't do 8.5 yet, but basically, and it's funny because I did a lunch and learn with AWS and somebody asked me if I could support 5.6, you know, like,
yep.
But there's something about also yep. having kind of like safe environment where you can just run an old piece of code indefinitely, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, that's the kind of promise that for like the techie people is, again, deploy, scale, sleep. Like you just, it's deployed. If it works when you deployed it, it will keep working indefinitely, you know, like, that's kind of like the promise of the whole technology is to do that. Obviously, there's like challenges to the whole thing, but because nothing's free, like everything has trade-offs, but that's kind of like the idea. It's like, oh, like, or if you need to upgrade, well, it's like simple, like any hosting company. Okay, I need to bump it up. But I think what's getting more challenges if you want to maintain an old code base and keep it safe, you know, there's like the security aspect of the platform too, which is like, a lot more secure than something you would have with like traditional like server hosting. So if you wanted to keep a 7.2 site or a 5.6 site up, like there's a lot of security issues that you have to mitigate. This makes it a lot easier to do, to like take out a whole category of them as well.
Yeah.
So it's just, that's the idea of serverless, like at the high level. Like what the product does is just like, it lets you connect. It's kind of like spin up WP. You connect your AWS account. Like I'll manage it. You can deploy to it. Now, basically, I have an agreement with Buildfast, which is like a partnership with them, which is like they're going to build hosting around this. So because I never wanted to do hosting. So per se. So it's just like, so it was great that I found business partners that wanted to bring that and like resell it to other hosting companies. Like we have a bunch of people that are like companies that are waiting to get their hands on it. But that's like the idea is that safety, that like peace of mind and that scalability, because people are just not down. They don't want to show up on a pricing page and hear about RAM, PHP workers, CPUs, and stuff like that. They just want to know. And even like the WooCommerce stuff is not even useful. Like, sorry, I'm going a little rant, but it's just a lot of these pricing pages, they're like, okay, we can handle like one, you know, let's say X amount of checkouts per hour or something like that. But like, what if those checkouts are in the next 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Right? Like you're not, there's no safe, like it's just, it's very opaque, you know, and people are just like not down with that. That's why like people are just, okay, well, why am I dealing with this? I'll just go pay Shopify and then I'll handle all the traffic, you know, that I can, you know, and I won't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. So it's like offer, like it's a real threat because it's, you know, and there's other vectors as well, like Lovable and like just being able to build a site and deploy it and just like, cool, it just stays there and it's like it'll scale, it'll handle all of that, like how to have this kind of experience. So there's a lot of like attacks on different vectors around it, but like at the end of the day, people just don't want to. We're at a point now, I think a critical point where like the idea of a server is just not something people want to read about in a pricing page at all.
Yeah
like unless you're like an enterprise client or something like that. But like for like, you know, for most of what WordPress sells, like it's just like, it's not something people, they're not the people that want to hear about that. Like they just want to, they want a site and they want to pay X amount of money for their site and understand like where the costs are going to come from and know that it'll stay up if something crazy happens and they go viral or all that stuff.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much, Carl, for being on. We could talk forever.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
And we actually have.
Yeah.
I was happy to finally get a chance to hang out in Canada this last year. But for everyone else who's coming across this either audio or video, where can they find you online and where can they learn more about Amir or what you're doing or where you might be speaking?
Yeah, I mean, I am mostly active on LinkedIn a bit, but carlalexander.ca is where I write. I mostly write my year in review. My current one's in progress right now. And then emirapp.com is the website for that. And then if you, there's like /reports, /public, like I have a public dashboard and stuff to see where, how the business is going and all of that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I really love the transparency of that too.
Yeah, I try, you know. Well, thanks a lot for having me on, Chris.
Yeah, thank you again, and for everyone on the internet, we'll see you next time.